Epilogue. Horses' hooves clattered behind Dorian as he came over the last rise in the foothills and saw Caliris. He stepped aside and waited patiently, enrapt by the view. The city was still 2 days distant, and between the Faltir Mountains and Mount Thrall, the plains spread broad and flat. The city and the castle rose with the mountain, one lonely spike in an ocean of grazing land. It had once been his home. The party began passing Dorian, riding on magnificent horses. Dorian got down on his knees and gave a peasant's obeisance. It wasn't a normal scouting party, nor were they regular soldiers, though their armor said they were. Their weapons and horses gave them away. The 6 huge soldiers were members of the God King's Guard, and from their smell, despite the half-cloaks, the Meisters accompanying them were actually Verdmeisters. They could only be coming from Cenaria, probably bearing great riches in the few chests they carried. Dorian was stealing brief glimpses when he saw the real treasure. A woman rode with Meisters, wearing thick robes, her face veiled. Something seemed oddly familiar about the way she carried herself, and then he saw her eyes. It was the woman he'd foreseen, his future wife. A shiver passed through his whole body, and he remembered bits and pieces of his old prophecies. Something about the process of searing his gift had blocked his memories of them. When he came to himself, he was kneeling. His muscles were cramped, and the sun hung low in the sky. The party was miles ahead of him, out of the grasslands. He'd been unconscious for half the day.
"Solon, where are you? I need you here."
But Dorian knew the answer. If Solon had survived Screaming Winds, he was probably already sailing home to Seth to face his lost love. That woman, now Empress Cado Wariamo, would be furious. Because of Dorian's prophecies, Solon had abandoned his homeland in its hour of need. Dorian could only hope that Solon's path wasn't as lonely as his own. Because even without prophecy, Dorian knew that whichever way he went, he would walk a path in darkness, alone, suffering so much that giving up his visions had seemed a good idea. With fear and trembling, Dorian stood. He looked at the path before him and the path behind. The road to Caliris and his future wife, Janine, that was her name, or the road back to his friends. Death and love, or life and loneliness. The god felt as distant as a summer in the freeze. Face set, back straight, Dorian continued his long walk to Caliris. Goran was always watching Eline, his gaze dark, intense. The first day, that hadn't been a problem, because she hadn't needed to relieve herself. The second day, it had. Eline had followed him a short distance into the woods, then stepped behind a bush for some privacy. He waited until she was squatting and lifting her skirts, and then followed her just to shame her. Of course, then she couldn't go. Each night, as they did each night and each morning, the Calidorans prayed. Calivas, calivos ras en me, cali me virtu rapt, recu virtam defite. Goran threw Eline to the ground and straddled her. As he prayed, he ground his fingers into the pressure points behind her ears. She screamed and felt warm wetness soak her dress as she lost control of her bladder. When the prayer was finished, Goran got up, clouted her ear, and said, "You stink, you filthy bitch." They didn't let her wash when they crossed a small mountain stream. When Goran took her aside that evening, Eline hiked up her skirts and relieved herself as he watched. He took no special delight in watching until she blushed and looked away.
"Tomorrow," he said, "I make you wear shit on your face. Yours or someone else's, your choice."
"Why do you do this?" Eline asked. "Isn't there anything decent in you?"
The next morning, however, they were awakened early. They set out immediately. The captives traveled in a line, tied together, walking behind the Caladorans. Eline was sixth in line out of six captives, with the young boy, Harold, right in front of her. It took her a while to figure out why the Caladorans were anxious, because they beat the captives if they talked. There were only five Caladoran soldiers this morning. That night, Goran seemed to have forgotten his threat. When he took Eline aside to let her relieve herself, he kept the camp in easy sight. Eline squatted among the tamaracks, which were dropping their golden needles with the onset of autumn, and pretended his presence didn't bother her.
"The Meisters meet up with us tomorrow," Goran said, keeping his eyes on the camp. "We'll hand all of you over then. That bastard Havin probably ran off, the coward."
Eline stood, and not 10 paces from the oblivious Goran, she saw a man leaning against a tree. The stranger wore a multitude of cloaks, vests, pocketed shirts, and pouches of all sizes, all of them horsehide, all tanned the same deep brown and worn soft from long use. Twin, forward-curving Gurkhas were tucked into the back of his belt. An elaborately scrimshawed bowcase was slung over his back, and hilts of various sizes hung among the garments. He had an affable face, wry, almond-shaped brown eyes, and loose, straight black hair. A Imuri stalker. He touched a finger to his lips.
"You finished?" Goran asked, glancing toward her.
"Yes," Eline said.
She glanced back to the stalker, but he was gone. There were only 4 soldiers when they camped that night at the edge of the woods to take advantage of the shelter of the trees. The Caladorans quarreled about whether they should press on in the darkness or if Havin and the other missing man had really run away. The night was short, and Goran woke Eline in the dark of the morning. He took her silently into the woods. She hiked up her skirts like it didn't bother her.
"How did your chest get hurt?" Eline asked.
"That wild bitch stabbed me with a pitchfork after I killed her husband and gutted her brats."
He shrugged, like letting her stab him was a moment of carelessness, embarrassing, but not serious. To Goran, eviscerating children held no special significance. He had hurt Eline and shamed her. She could forgive those. But that dismissive shrug blew on the small spark of fury in her heart. For the first time in her life since Rat, Eline hated. Goran had brought a bow with him, and now he strung it.
"This day we get to camp," he said. "Nefdada will do terrible things to you."
Goran licked his dry lips.
"I can save you."
"Save me?"
"What he does should not be done. It is Lodrakari foulness. If you run now, I will put an arrow in your back and spare you."
His mercy was so bizarre that Eline's hatred dissolved. A flash of light burst from the camp 50 paces behind them, throwing shadows against the trees. A scream followed it. Then the sound of galloping horses. Eline turned and saw 12 unfamiliar Caladoran horsemen charging into the camp from the north. They had come early to collect their slaves.
"Run!"
A shout rang out, louder than a man should have been able to yell. Through the trees, Eline saw the Imuri stalker fighting the Caladorans. He cut through two of them in a single move. Fire leapt from one of the horseman's hands, but he dodged it. Goran knocked an arrow and drew it. But there were too many trees and Caladorans between him and the Imuri. Then, only paces away, the young boy, Harold, burst from the woods, running away. Goran turned and aimed, leading his new target. All Eline thought was, no. She grabbed Goran's dagger from his belt, brought it over his arm, and buried it in his throat. He spasmed, and the arrow leapt from the bow, whisking harmlessly over Harold's head. The bow dropped from Goran's fingers, and he and Eline regarded each other, shock widening his eyes. The dagger was lodged squarely in the center of his throat, its wide blade blocking his windpipe. He exhaled, his chest straining, and air whistled. He put a hand to his throat and felt the blade, still unbelieving. Then he tried to inhale. His diaphragm pumped like a bellows, but he couldn't get air. He fell to his knees. Eline couldn't move. Goran ripped the dagger out of his throat and gasped, but the gasp turned to a gurgle. He coughed, and blood sprayed over Eline. He kept trying to breathe as his lungs filled with blood. In moments, he dropped to the forest floor. Despite the blood on her face, her dress, and her hands, despite the piteous look on Goran's face and the horror of watching a man die, Eline didn't feel sorry. She had hated Goran only a minute before, but she hadn't killed him out of hatred. He simply had to be stopped. If she could have the moment back, she'd do the same thing. And just like that, she understood. "My God! What a fool I've been," she said aloud. "Forgive me, Kylar." With magic bursting in the woods behind her, setting the trees alight, Eline ran. On the north side of Voss Island, in the gloom of the rainy autumn day, Kylar stood staring at the unmarked cairn he'd built. Durzo's grave. Kylar was spattered with blood, his wet boy grays scored and singed with magic. In a rage, he'd fought for hours, killing every Caladoran soldier and meister he laid eyes on. From the slowly diminishing magic on the throne room's floor, he'd seen Logan's stand, seen the Ferali turn, and witnessed the destruction of the Caladoran army. He'd seen how the men had looked at Logan. Though the figures were tiny, it was written in every line of their bodies. Logan would march his army home, and in 2 days, when they arrived, he would find his castle swept out and cleansed of the Caladoran presence, except for Kali. But that was one creature Kylar was going to steer clear of. Let King Gyre invite some mages to take care of that. "We won, I guess," he told Durzo's grave. Kylar knew there was no use railing against his life. He was the Night Angel, and he didn't get celebrations. As Durzo had told him long ago, he would always be separate, alone. "It is just so hard to be immortal," the Kakari said. Kylar was too exhausted to be surprised or offended. The Kakari had spoken before, he remembered now, trying to save his life. "So you can talk," he said. The Kakari puddled into his hand and formed a stylized face. It smiled and winked at him. Kylar sighed and sucked it back into his skin. Kylar stared at his stump. He'd lost his forearm for nothing. He'd made an oath to the wolf for nothing. Everything Kylar had ever learned, everything he'd ever suffered, had been for one thing, killing Garoth or Sul was Kylar's destiny. Gareth was the vile fount from which Kylar's and Jarl's and Eileen's misery flowed. It was only fitting that the man who'd led Kylar to become a wet boy would be Kylar's last debtor. Without Gareth, there would be no Roth. Without Roth, Eileen would be unscarred, Jarl would be alive and whole, and Kylar would be... what? Well, not a wet boy. Count Drake had once told Kylar, "There's a divinity that shapes beauty from our rough-hewn lives." It was a lie, as Kylar's destiny was a lie. Perhaps that was why this was so hard. He'd begun to believe in Eileen's divine economy. So now, he hadn't just lost Eileen, who'd been part of him from the beginning, who'd made Kylar believe good things about himself. He'd also lost his destiny. If he had a destiny, he had a purpose, some pearl being built around the evil he'd suffered and inflicted. If he'd been shaped for a purpose, maybe there was a shaper. If there was a shaper, perhaps its name was the One God, and perhaps that One God was a bridge over the chasm between killer and saint that separated Kylar from Eileen. But there was no bridge, no God, no shaper, no purpose, no destiny, no beauty. There was no going back. He'd been cheated of justice and vengeance and love and purpose at once. He'd thought he could change, that he could buy peace for the price of an old sword. But retribution was only an instrument of justice. It was Kylar who thirsted to mete it out. He'd killed many men today, and he couldn't make himself feel sorry for it. This was what it was to be the Night Angel. Perhaps a better man could lay down the sword. Kylar could not. Not even though it had cost him Eileen. Every time he thought of Eileen, her face morphed into Vi's. Every time he thought of Vi, his fantasies morphed from meting out punishment to fantasies of another kind. "Master," he said to the cairn, "I don't know what to do."
"Finish the job."
He knew exactly the intonation Durzo would have given the words, exasperated, but firm. It was true. The wolf had fulfilled his part of the deal. Kylar had come back from death immediately. It turned out to be a lousy trade, but a deal was a deal. So Kylar would go steal Curoc and ride to Taurus Bend and get his arm back. It sounded simple enough. After all, stealing wasn't hard when you could make yourself invisible. It wouldn't be a second too soon to get his arm back, either. His stump was aching, and he wouldn't have thought it, but losing a hand threw off his balance.
"You're not here because you don't know what to do, boy. You always knew what to do."
That was true, too. Kylar would do this job, and then go find Vi, and kill her.
"You won't kill her,"
the Kakari said.
"Chatty all of a sudden, aren't you?" Kylar asked.
The Kakari didn't answer. It was right, though. Kylar wasn't here for direction, not really. He just missed his master. It was the first time he'd been to the grave since Durzo had died. Tears started flowing, and Kylar knew only that they were tears of loss. He'd lost his master. He'd lost the girl he betrayed his master to save. He'd lost his master's daughter. He'd lost his one chance at a peaceful life. Mild-mannered herbalist. It had been a sweet delusion, maybe. But it had been sweet. Kylar was lonely, and he was tired of being lonely. A gopher had dug a hole near the foot of Durzo's cairn.
Durza would be pissed if he had to spend eternity with gophers pawing his corpse. Kylar looked at the hole, irritated. It was deep enough that, to normalize, the hole would just appear black. But Kylar saw a distinct metallic glimmer at the bottom. He got on his knees, and his stump, ow, and shifted to his elbow, better, and reached in. He stood with a small, sealed metal box in hand. One word was etched on it. Azoth. It sent a shiver through him. How many people knew that name? Kylar cracked it open awkwardly between his stump and one hand. There was a note inside.
Hey,
it said in Durzo's tight handwriting. I thought it was my last one, too. He said I got one more for old time's sake. Kylar's eyes blurred. He couldn't believe it. The letter went on, but his eyes were drawn to the final words.
Make no deals with the wolf.
The letter was dated a month after Kylar had killed his master. Durzo was alive!